Welcome everyone to The Art of Advisory. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Kirk Bowman. Now we have Seth David, we have the privilege to have Seth David here with us. And Seth is from a company called Nerd Enterprises, and which is one of Seth's claim to fame. One of Seth's focus in the way he portrays himself and his company is to create high quality technical content for his clients and other colleagues. So Seth, let me ask you the first question, if you don't mind. Tell me about how you got started with creating content. So before you get started, for the few people living under a rock that have never heard of Seth before, Seth was one of the first accounting professionals that focused 100% of his marketing, and it may have been a fluke, so I'll ask you about that, Seth, whether that was for marketing purposes or not, on creating content, articles, how-tos, and videos in YouTube. Seth has over 700 videos in YouTube, if I have the number correct. So Seth, tell us how you got started with content creation and why.
So the original impetus for why I started creating content was that I wanted to cut down on the time I was spending writing emails that I was writing to answer the same questions over and over again. I mean, that's the short answer, is by this time I had started to work on learning how to use webinar software so I could have webinars and record them, because immediately I saw that there was value in holding a webinar on a subject to draw in a crowd, doing it for free, recording it, and then selling the recording of that webinar later on. And so I said to myself one day, why not just pretend like I'm having a webinar, but no audience there, and just record a video of me going through the motions, sharing my screen, explaining how to do, you know, some of those most frequently asked questions that I was being asked. And so I started doing that and putting it up on my website. And then eventually an internet marketing consultant I had hired suggested that I start putting these videos on YouTube. And it was probably the best advice I had gotten in my entire career to this day.
So you're putting them up on YouTube. What was the immediate change that you saw just from publishing them on that platform?
Well, it saved me a lot of trouble. You know, I was able to now, the next time I got the question that a video I had done answered, I was able to just shoot them a link and say, here, watch this video, it'll answer your question. And I started, every time I would put up a new video, I would post the link up on my website and say, you know, here's this week's video on how to record an NSF check in QuickBooks. And I would just put that link up there. But that was the only place it was going originally, like I said, until somebody suggested I start putting them up on YouTube. And then, of course, having them up on YouTube drew in traffic that I didn't expect or even count on getting. And lo and behold, not only was it a great resource that saved me time, it turned out to be a great marketing tool to draw in people who would see the videos and then want to hire me to help them more.
And Seth, so if I'm understanding this correctly, you started this as a journey to simplify or help the communications with your clients that were already asking technical questions on how to do something, and it simply just became a library, a how-to library for your current clients. I would love to understand what impact that had on new clients or growing your business from a marketing point of view.
So, you know, again, what I noticed, of course, is when I would put sort of generalist kind of videos like how to record an NSF check, it drew in kind of a general crowd. Obviously, the majority of people would just watch the video. And, you know, one clue that I got early on that specific topic, because that was one of the very first videos I had done, a guy wrote in and commented on my blog saying, you know, I've had 5 interns who supposedly knew QuickBooks who couldn't figure out how to record this. I just watched your video and learned how to do it in 5 minutes. So as soon as I got that kind of feedback, and as more of that kind of feedback came in, it occurred to me that there was something to this, that maybe I was actually good at explaining how to do things. I didn't see myself that way necessarily in the beginning. And then to get to the specific answer to your question, Hector, as I started doing videos on specific things, targeting a specific industry or a topic that applied more so to a particular industry, for example, how to handle customer deposits. Now you have all of a sudden a lot of service-based businesses who deal with that, lawyers, accountants, and other people who are dealing with how do I handle that deposit I've received that I haven't earned yet, right? How to record it in the liability account and so on. You know the drill. That started, I noticed that the more specific I got with the nature and subject matter of my content, the more specific a crowd I would draw in. And that actually drove more calls from people saying, I'd like more help. The generalist stuff was great because it got me a lot of views and things. But the stuff that really converts, I learned early on, is the stuff that's aimed at something very specific and an audience that has a very specific need.
So Seth, you've been doing the videos on YouTube for how long now?
I started my channel, I think, somewhere around 2008, which is kind of when I started all social media. That's when Facebook and Twitter were still basically new. You know, prior to that, Facebook was available, as you may recall, only to college students. And I think, it was like late 2007, early 2008 that it became available to the public.
So if you were starting over, essentially giving advice to yourself back then based on what you've learned, or if somebody even watching this says, you know what, this style of marketing makes sense, I'd like to try it, what advice would you give to somebody just starting out?
Well, assuming I knew then what I know now, which is of course based on having all this experience doing it, I would probably guide myself in terms of my sort of workflow for how I now create content. You know, and I would suggest to myself that I get more focused on, as I was sort of alluding to a couple minutes ago, very specific target areas. You know, last year I started producing content specifically for real estate brokers and agents. And guess who started calling and hiring me for more help, right? So really using your content to point it and aim it at a specific niche. And then those people come and start you as an expert. In fact, it's funny, one small way in which it started to backfire was some of these real estate professionals were coming onto my website and they were getting confused because they saw there was a lot of other stuff besides just real estate. You know, so I had to explain to some people that real estate is definitely very much a specialty of mine, but it's not the only thing I do.
So let me ask you a different question, Seth, because you're sort of a multifaceted guy in terms of the skill sets. You have a pretty eclectic YouTube channel in terms of, like, you know, you have Excel videos, you have videos on CRM and project management software, you have QuickBooks videos. I think you even have other accounting software videos. And then you spoke about specializing, which is a really important hot topic for a lot of accounting professionals and IT professionals and advisors, is to narrow down your focus on maybe just one industry or one type of business. How does someone like you that know a little bit of everything pick a niche and commit to a niche or some sort of specialty?
So In my case, I sort of let the niche pick me. And that's literally been the case, you know, because I, for a long time, was a bit of a generalist. In fact, before there was so much focus on cloud accounting and, you know, building ecosystems, I remember years ago on Sleeter, which is now, of course, Accountex, I'd written a blog post where the long and short of it was that I didn't feel in those days you had to specialize, because I felt like if you had a good command of the core accounting fundamentals, you could figure out how to apply that knowledge into any business model. And that's what I would do for a lot of years, is somebody would come in from an industry I hadn't served before. And I knew that with my understanding of accounting fundamentals, I could get in there, speak to them, have them explain to me the operations of their business. And while they're explaining that to me, in my mind, I'm going through the accounting flow. And how does a sale get made? And how does the money come in? And how does, so I, especially because I had a very deep understanding of debits and credits, the most fundamental part of bookkeeping and accounting, I could literally figure out from hearing somebody describe their business workflow how to do the accounting for it. So for that reason, early on, I felt you did not need to specialize. When we got into this cloud world and now we start having to use all these different apps, that's when I changed my opinion and said, you know, now you do need to specialize, because there would be too much to learn, you know, if you tried to be a generalist in this world. So, you know, again, going back to your specific question, I let the niche pick me. Real estate fell into my lap because it's something I had done. I had built a website out there on how to do accounting for property management concerns, but that drew in a lot of other real estate professionals like brokers and agents. And long story short, a mutual friend of mine and another colleague introduced me to a client who's a real estate broker in Beverly Hills. I got into his stuff. I cleaned up his books. I started training him to read his balance sheet and P&L because he wasn't doing that before. And lo and behold, I realized I had an opportunity here. In fact, that was when I made the decision to start putting an emphasis on growing a consulting arm for Nerd Enterprises, because I said, with all this knowledge I have and everything I'm teaching others to do, A, I should be drinking my own Kool-Aid and speaking from actual experience, not just speaking from theory, right? In other words, have my own clients and actually be doing the work as I go out and, you know, claim to be able to teach others how to do it. And I saw the real estate broker and agent model as a really scalable niche client to take on, because the business model from where I sit is very simple, and I can create a homogenous system that I can use for any broker and agent that comes in my door. And with QuickBooks Online and Slack and Smartsheet, basically between those three tools right there, I can make it happen and build the system, and I can automate so much that it's like a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer to me. Go into real estate. And you know, one more thought on this, because I want to emphasize, you know, the point about how the niche has kind of found me in my case. Because after that experience, I started looking to grow that, made the mistake of taking on a client who didn't fit that mold, didn't work out, parted company with the client, because there was a very different kind of business model, which introduced complexities I really wasn't prepared to take on, nor was my system or pricing built around these complexities. So it didn't work. Then I get, earlier this year, at the very beginning of this year, a guy pounding on my door saying, I've been watching your videos for years and I don't see a lot on e-commerce, but I've been through several accountants. None of them seem to know what they're doing. They're all making a mess of my books and I really want you to help me. And I shied away and I said, you know, it's not really what I specialize in. It's not my area. Yes, I'm sure I could figure it out, but it would take me a while, and on and on and on. And then I started shopping around asking people for referrals to others who were experts in e-commerce, and I started to have the same experience, which was every one of these people is up to their eyeballs in work, and they don't have time to take anything on. So all of a sudden, I put on my economics 101 hat, and I said, well, duh, we have major demand for people who can provide a service accounting-wise to e-commerce companies, and evidently very short supply. Which means, going back to what you said when you introduced me, and this answered probably another question that's going to be asked soon, which is how or why I'm able to price things so high, is that's how I do it. I look for those opportunities where there's not a lot of people offering what I can offer. And so when you have a high level of demand and short supply, that equals higher prices, right? And then I just had to figure out how to scale this, because e-commerce is infinitely more complex accounting-wise than real estate. Real estate, simple. I have a sale. I have a commission. I earn a commission. I might have to pay a commission out to somebody if I've shared it, because I'm the broker and I have an agent. You know, very, very simple business model. E-commerce, infinitely more complex. Reluctant to take it on until I saw it that way, as here's an opportunity and I can charge a lot and offer the value.
And Seth, beyond the core accounting, bookkeeping, and financial organization piece of e-commerce, which is extremely important because the word commerce is part of it, right? You know, what opportunities do you see on consulting and advisory beyond just the numbers to e-commerce clients? It looks like that is one of the industries that you're going to hit hard this year. I would love to know what opportunities are you starting to see on the horizon, and what have you done with some of your e-commerce clients in terms of advisory consulting and help them improve?
So one of the first things, because now that I've been working with this and actually one other client all year trying to get their systems set up and cleaned up and caught up and everything, I learned a few things along the way. And based on that, I've begun to form what my process will be as I take on new clients in this niche. And one of the first things, if not the first thing, I'm going to do with every new client now is, before I even touch their accounting, I'm going to ask them to see their master SKU list. I want to see every product and every SKU on every sales channel in which you sell a product. And because what I've learned is, usually we have one SKU in QBO. We may have three or four other SKUs in sales channels that really point back to that one SKU in QBO. And I need to make sure that I understand how that mapping works, so that I can grab data from the sales channel and map it to the right item back in QBO. That in itself is a project that I've built out in Smartsheet. And that's where it will, that's the first thing we're going to do. So as far as advisory and advising, you're talking about advising the clients, right? then that's the first thing I would advise them on, is we need to have a master SKU list. And anytime you take on a new product to sell, here's the process. And here's the beauty of our world, Hector. And I know you'll appreciate this, because here's where it's going to get to when I'm all finished, is once we've built that master list, it's going to be in Smartsheet, like I said. And then we're going to have a procedure, right? So I'm going to say, hey, client, here's the procedure. You've just decided you're going to start selling Huggies diapers on your website. Great. I need every SKU for every different variation on every diaper that you sell. And each one needs to be added into Smartsheet as a new line item in our master SKU list. Now, initially, my procedure was going to be, and then to some extent still is, that Smartsheet will send me an alert and let me know the minute a new product has been added, so I can make sure it gets added into QBO timely so they can get invoices out or do whatever they need to do. But now, enter Zapier. I am going to configure Zapier that when a new line item is added into this project in Smartsheet, add the new product into QBO for me. And I paid for the upgraded Zapier plan, so these zaps will happen within 5 minutes anytime they add the new item into Smartsheet. Now, I haven't tested if I can push through all of the detailed information from Zapier to QBO, but I suspect I can. If not, I'll push through what can be pushed through, and then also have Zapier create an alert in Active Collab, which is my main project management tool or task management tool that I use, to remind me to then go in there and actually add in whatever information, you know, it wasn't automatically added in. So it's processes, 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 and then explaining to the client those processes and advising them on how to make sure we don't create a mess.
Seth, it's interesting your point earlier about how the niche found you, yet in your own mind as a professional, you're like, well, I know the accounting, so therefore I can apply it to any business problem. But realizing that's the conversation in your head. That's not the conversation in the customer's head. And so as I'm listening to you describe e-commerce, I'm going, well, if somebody stumbles across this part of this video and they have an e-commerce store, they could reach out contacting you. In fact, we could pull out that segment, how you just described creating the master SKU list, and that could be a marketing video. And that's what I kind of want to help the audience think about, is this is how you really go after a niche. You have to put yourself in the customer's shoes. You have to look at it with their perspective. We talk about doing this with pricing all the time, but it starts with, where's the problem? And you just outlined that. Yes, you know you can solve any business problem, but a customer doesn't know that. And that's why you pick a niche. So you can let the customer know from their point of view, you can help them out. So to say all that about marketing, I now want to transition over to pricing. So having a niche, just, it's common sense. You can price that higher because you're seen as a specialist. You're seen as an expert, and it makes sense. You know, I'm going to pay more to a heart surgeon than I am a family practitioner. Talk about how you developed your pricing once you started focusing on a niche, whether it be what you're doing now with e-commerce or previous with real estate.
So, you know, when I took on that real estate broker, that the one I was referring to earlier, I had no idea how to price him, because this was really the first client of this kind I was taking on in a very long time. Prior to that, my primary focus was on training, and I would always take on consulting clients on the side. It was important to me because it would keep me fresh, but it wasn't something I looked to do. You know, every once in a while, a training client would say, hey, can I just hire you to do this for me? And I'd say, sure, or I'd get a referral here and there. So, you know, for a long time, I wasn't in this, and all that was to explain why when I took on this real estate broker, I had no real basis for coming up with pricing, and his prior bookkeeper was billing him hourly. So what I did was I had a hold of his books, and I went back about 6 months, and I looked at what she was billing him each month. Didn't care what the hours were. I had already established he was on desktop QuickBooks. I was going to migrate him to QuickBooks Online. I knew I could scale things and probably get things done in a fraction of the time it was taking her, whatever she was doing. And I could see pretty quickly from looking at the actual bookkeeping work that she was not nearly as experienced as I was at this stuff. Let's just put it like that. I don't want to tear anybody apart here. But the bottom line was, I knew that I could charge roughly what she was charging and get it done really fast. You know, streamline the you know what out of it. So are we under FCC regulations here? Do I have to watch my language? I'll watch it just in case. So I looked at the prior 6 months billing that she had billed him in terms of total dollars, and I went with the highest month that she ever charged him, rounded it to an even number, and I went back to him and I said, I don't charge by the hour. I have no intention of doing any such thing. Looking at everything I've looked at, which really meant just looking at what she had billed him, I said, here's what I'm inclined to charge you on a flat monthly fee. You'll never get a bill for more than this. You'll never get a bill for less than this unless we've discussed and specifically and mutually agreed otherwise. And because what I've learned right there and then is most clients will, they'll actually pay more for the predictability of knowing exactly what they're getting billed each month. Right? So that's kind of step one, I think, in pricing is remembering that you can charge a little higher than what you might have been charging or inclined to charge hourly, because clients will pay for that predictability. It's the peace of mind, which remember at the end of the day, I don't care what niche you're in or what you actually do accounting wise, whether it's consulting or advisory or otherwise, you know, at the end of the day, the product that we really offer to our clients is peace of mind. Because all the stuff we do, everything, all of it adds up to the client is going to have peace of mind. The peace of mind that comes with knowing I have somebody who knows what they're doing covering my back on one of the most sensitive parts of my life, right? And that's really the product that I believe we sell as accountants and bookkeepers. So, you know, approaching the pricing, that's how I did my first one. And from there, what I also did was I came up with kind of a model. And I said, the way I teach it now is a little bit reverse engineered from the way I came up with it. But essentially what I said was, I want X number of clients in at an average of this amount of monthly revenue. And I did the math on that. And it came out to, let's just call it $2 million in annual revenues just from this consulting arm that I'm trying to build. And from there I said, what am I willing to offer at this average monthly rate? What services am I willing to provide? So at the end, and the way I like to explain my approach to pricing, there's a ton of overlap between what we call quote unquote value pricing, but I have my own spin on it, which I like to call power pricing, because I like to say that the power is in my hands as the consultant to decide what gets me excited to do the work. And so when I backed into my pricing and my, you know, services that I'd offered this way, I could look at the list of things I'm going to do each month for the client, compare that with what I was inclined to want to charge each month, and say, you know what, I can scale this all day long and build the systems and streamline this to a point where most of these clients at the average middle rate will take probably no more than about an hour a week just to babysit the bank feeds and massage the data and make sure everything's going where it should go, and then run and review some reports. Once in a while, it'll take a little longer than an hour a week, and I don't care, because the way I'm building this, there's so much room in there in terms of how I can scale this. I don't care if one month I have to spend 10 hours in one week with the client, because most weeks it's substantially less than that. So time is our most valuable resource. So no, we don't want to bill by the hour, but we do have to mind where our time is being spent, right? So that was my goal, was to be able to build a system and a pricing plan and the services that we offer around a process that enables me to scale it really well. And so I know when I take on a new client, the first 1 to 3 months, depending on the industry and the situation, is going to be very front loaded, because I'm going to be spending a lot of time digging in deep, reconciling every transaction to the penny, no plug numbers. In an e-commerce concern, I'm going to reconcile every single sales channel, every single sale to the penny, every dollar of fees. I want to know exactly where it goes and how it's being mapped from the website through Webgility or whatever we're using. And I don't use undeposited funds. I learned that that's a mess, because it becomes a big dumping ground for all of your payments from every sales channel. So, you know, instead I built a system, and this is another advisory thing that I've guided the clients on, although really once they've hired me, it falls back on me to handle this anyway. But they like knowing that this is my process, where each sales channel has its own merchant clearing account on the balance sheet. And we run all the sales through that, and all the transfers of funds that go into the bank account come through that same clearing account. And I bring this up to explain, you know, how we build these processes, and to make the point that in the beginning, it's very front loaded. So in the beginning, if I'm new, and if I've just switched, let's say, from hourly to, let's just call it flat rate pricing, then I'm going to be concerned with how many hours I'm going to have to spend earning that money, and what's my effective hourly rate, because I know we have a hard time divorcing ourselves from that kind of thinking. And so if I were to look at it from that point, and I say this for the sake of illustration, I'm going to lose a lot of money in the first 1 to 3 months, mostly in the first month. But what happens is, as I build these systems and start scaling things, by month 3 and beyond, I have it so streamlined that I have economies of scale. And now, of course, it's taking me a very small fraction of the time that I might have had to spend in the beginning to earn the money that I'm earning based on what I've agreed to with the client.
Wow, Seth, you know, there's so much to unpack there from what you mentioned there. So I want to roll it back a little bit and maybe talk about some of the things that you mentioned so many things that I want to unpack a couple. So when you were talking about, no problem. When you were talking about QBO, we're talking about QuickBooks Online. And this is a terminology that most accountants just get accustomed to just saying QBO. So you're talking about QuickBooks Online and you endorsed or emphasized that, you know, the best way to be effective is to work with a cloud-based accounting system, and QuickBooks Online is the one that you mostly use, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something called Zapier, okay? Mm-hmm. So Zapier is an app that connects other apps together and transfers information between them. You mm-hmm. mentioned that Zapier is one of the tools that you use on the back end to take data from one source, like a spreadsheet or Smartsheet, and we'll talk about Smartsheet in a second, and transfer it to QuickBooks. So no physical human being has to do this by hand, correct?
Correct. And to be very clear, Zapier is the newest tool. I've just started to implement it.
Okay. And talk about Smartsheet real quick for the folks that don't know what Smartsheet is.
So Smartsheet, just the way I like to explain it, think spreadsheet plus project management application features on steroids. That's the best way to succinctly sum it up. It's just that. It's an incredibly powerful project management tool. And I also mentioned Active Collab. So people wonder sometimes, well, why do you need two? And here's the basic difference, and I'll explain it, and it'll help explain what Smartsheet really is. Smartsheet is the one I'm going to use in most cases with clients to collaborate with them on the projects. And the reason for that is Smartsheet is incredibly customizable. I can create an infinite number of fields that I need in the form of columns in a project and in different formats. So I can have multiple date-based fields and create alerts and triggers based on those dates. Whereas any other project management software that you ever have used, Asana, Active Collab, Teamwork, or any of them, none of them give you the ability to just create as many fields as you need. Some of them will have maybe two date-based fields, like a start date and a due date. But I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but I wanted to emphasize why I love Smartsheet so much, especially for the projects where I need to collaborate with the client in a project management app. And that's essentially what Smartsheet is. It's a highly customizable, very powerful, very robust project management application that's laid out and looks exactly like a spreadsheet.
Okay, and just real quick, I want to bring Kirk into this because Kirk is a database programmer, and I believe Kirk, your specialty is FileMaker, correct?
Yes, that's the primary platform.
Right. So Seth is talking about using a spreadsheet on steroids that can be customized to load information in there that also has the capacity through the cloud to transfer the information to another system like QuickBooks Online. So Kirk, I know you're in your previous world, that's basically what you did, right? You created custom screens that customers feel familiar with so they can load the information. Do you see any connection between your database programming days and what Seth is doing with Smartsheet?
Well, I see a couple things. The first one would be just kind of one of the themes in the accounting space right now is this idea that accountants really are taking on more of an IT role in the sense of developing processes and primarily through integrating apps. You go back 5 years, integrating apps was something that only developers could do. Now, the terminology was still the same because you were using APIs, but now you have things like Zapier that has come along, and the primary purpose of Zapier is to connect the API from product A with the API from product B and to put an interface on it so you don't have to be a developer. So that's the change. Now, how that has affected software development is just like automation is driving accountants and bookkeepers to focus more on an advisory capacity to move up the food chain, if you will. Same thing's happening in technology. As software developers, we're tackling more complex problems. And so it's no longer a question of can you customize, it's what degree of customization is necessary. One of my current customers in that business right now, they are a event planning company. And, you know, the type of simple customization that Seth's talking about with Smartsheet would not work for them. They need a complete custom app to match their exact workflow. But not every business is that way. And so there is kind of a bridge. But it's pushing all of us up the food chain, requiring us to do more high-value consulting and advisory work.
And I believe, Seth, and I'll bring you in on this, I believe the ultimate consultant, the ultimate business advisor is the one that can truly understand what the client wants, how their business functions, and can customize and enhance the experience of their day-to-day interaction with customers and ultimately the computer or their data system. So I find that to be a common theme throughout sort of like the power advisors, the power consultants, the one that can marry this concept that Kirk's talking about customizing, you know, the experience from zero, or like Seth is saying, you know, let's pick an existing product that's already out there, like Smartsheet and possibly something like Method CRM, something that allows the user to change the flow, the workflow, you know, where the buttons are, the size of the fields, and what data you want to capture. Now, Seth, let me ask you a couple of questions before we wrap up. So last year, during 2007, your focus was real estate. And you did videos about real estate. You wrote articles about real estate. You went to the Real Estate Association meetings and local events, and you try to write in the real estate blogs. And was that effective for you?
All right. So the last part I had on my plans to do, but I hadn't actually gotten around to do it. So
you did that's all something digital, that I, right? You did
in all other words, digital. Going to the local, like here's, in other words, the one thing I haven't done yet to target the real estate industry a little bit further that I plan to do is to start attending National Association of Realtors or NAR events in my area and start getting plugged in with that community. My focus this year has evolved so much into the e-commerce area that I've kind of put the real estate stuff aside. But also the beauty of what we do with video, as you well know, Hector, is that I can sort of rest on my laurels for a while there. Because I did. I created a lot of blog posts and the videos to go with them that explained how to record a sale for real estate brokers and agents. And I could break each one up into two separate pieces of content, one for the broker, one for the agent. And so I tackled very specific little topics. Then I held a webinar. And instead of charging for the webinar, I made it free because I knew that would just be another hour-long piece of content, which would get me traffic and get me more realtors who would want to hire me for more help. So I created a little mini mountain of content for real estate brokers and agents, and I'm able to rest and let that incubate, right? Because that's why I don't freak out when people say, well, what's the best time to publish something? Is it on a Wednesday at 9 a.m. or on a Thursday at 2 a.m.? And I'm like, I don't care. That's not my play. I'm not trying to leverage that incredible, you know, a viral reaction the minute I publish something. My game is much more of a long game where I just want this content to get out there and incubate on the web, and over time it builds more traffic. So that's the strategy around targeting a niche with content. So while that's working for me, and still as recently as yesterday, I got a reply to one of my weekly emails that I send out from a broker who had gotten onto my email list, obviously because he came onto my site to watch one of my videos. And I have that little pop-up that appears that says, hey, get my free 1 hour video on how to audit your company in QuickBooks Online. So a lot of people sign up to get that video. I'm sure that's how he got on my list, had seen my videos and replied to my email that I sent out this past weekend yesterday saying that he'd like to hire me for help. So that's working for me while I build the e-commerce stuff. And so, yes, I've created content, a ton of it, in order to attract the clients in the niche that I wanted to target, which was real estate. This year I shifted gears, and it's not even about the content. It's more about, for me, this is about learning how to put, and this goes back to something else I wanted to say based on what you're saying, Hector, and you as well, Kirk. You know, our job as accountants, I believe, people are like running scared right now in ours and other industries about AI and how it's going to replace our jobs. And the simple answer is this, I think. It's the repetitive jobs, the jobs that are repetitive in nature, repetitive functions that are going to get replaced first by AI. The more repetitive, the more quickly you're going to be replaced by some kind of artificial intelligence or some kind of a bot, right? Customer service. We have chat bots now. That's a big thing that's being talked about in all the tech periodicals. So there's that. I think our job, if we want to evolve and stay in what will become our new roles as accountants and bookkeepers, and especially as advisors, is just that. We have to be advisors. And I think that we, our job is to, like Kirk was talking about, we have to build the ecosystem. We have to be the strategist that says, first, we have to listen to the client very carefully. This is where I like to say, I like to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. So I'm forced to listen and understand everything the client needs. And then while the client's talking to me, you know, I said earlier that while the client was talking to me, I was visualizing how to translate their operations into the accounting, you know, fundamentals. Now it's a little different. I'm listening to their operations and translating it into what ecosystem do I need to build for this client? What apps do I need to use for them? What do I need to bring together to make sure the information flows in the most automatic way possible? And I'm not just talking about the accounting, because a lot of the stuff we do, like you alluded to, is, you know, tangent to other areas of their business. So for example, I do webinars and I create content, and now Zapier takes anybody who's registered for one of my Zoom webinars and automatically puts them in a MailChimp list, so that now they're on a list to receive information going forward about what I'm doing each week in terms of my webinars. And there's more, because then it also will add them into Nimble, which is my CRM of choice. And it will create a new contact in Nimble, and it will tag them in such a way that I know exactly where they came from. You know, so I can look at them in Nimble and I say, oh, this person is a contact now because they signed up for a webinar. And this person is a contact because they were one of my guests on my weekly Friday Zoom call. So it's, and now I can take, and this goes back to something you asked about earlier, Kirk, and then I'll shut up. What I've learned to do over time, and Hector, you mentioned this also, that I didn't just do QuickBooks videos. I started doing videos on lots of other products. And what it really all, where it really all came from, I should say, is that I started to realize over time that as I learned to do new things and how to use tools beneficial for my business, it helped me grow and scale my own business, why not turn around and teach that to others? So basically, I look at myself as like this sponge where I'm going to absorb everything I can and learn everything I can about how to make the whole business run better, and now turn myself into an advisor where I can take what I've absorbed and spit it back out in a way that makes it easy for people to understand how to grow, scale, and better run their business.
Well, Seth, once you get started, it's amazing. We definitely want to have you back for sure, because we have a lot of things to talk about. I don't know, Kirk wants to ask you the last questions and then just kind of plug in how people can get a hold of you.
So Seth, one of the questions we like to ask every guest as we wrap up, what's the best business advice you've ever received from an advisor or a mentor?
I think it's what I said earlier when that internet marketing consultant told me, Seth, you need to start putting your videos on YouTube. That literally started me on this path to where I am today, where you guys started off this very podcast by, you know, I know you were joking around, but by saying the Seth David, you know, and the point is that that advice got me on the path that led me to create this incredible online presence that has won me all sorts of accolades from my colleagues, my peers, and perhaps, I don't want to say most importantly, but as importantly, the clients that now come in my door as a result of all this content that I've produced. So yeah, putting my videos on YouTube, probably the best advice I've ever gotten in my career.
And Seth, how can people get a hold of you? You know, plug in your website, your social media, everything.
www.nerdenterprises.com that's the place to go, because everything you need to access can be accessed right from there. You know, that's my main website. And so that's what I would, let's keep it simple. Just one place, nerdenterprises.com. And Hector, I feel like I have to wave back to that little cat that's behind you. It's been waving at me this whole time.
So real quick, I don't know if this is going to make it to the actual podcast, but we'll leave it on the video cast. That is one of those, I'm not sure if it's Japanese or Chinese cats that you see in every Chinese or Japanese restaurant, but it's typically static. But this one in particular, that little hand is supposed to be like the cha-ching sound. And that little cat is what keeps the money coming into this office. So
I like it. So it's like a prosperity thing.
It's a prosperity thing. And true story, we never had a check from a client bounce ever. And I don't believe in these things ever. But there was one week that we forgot to change the battery of this thing, and this thing was still, and one of our clients bounced a check. And then when I noticed that, I said, I'll never leave my cat without the battery ever again. So.
Gotcha.
So Seth, it was an absolute pleasure having you here. We would love to have you back. We'd love to explore this concept about marketing online with videos, and most of all, most important, the concept of sharing what you know as a way to get more clients versus what most consultants and accountants think is like, once you share what you know, you shot yourself on the foot and they don't need you anymore. And I actually believe it's quite the opposite. And Seth is the perfect example for that. As a matter of fact, one of the folks that I looked up to for a very long time when I started my career is Seth. And one of the reasons why I do what I do, I also share videos online. It's basically a copycat of Seth David from Nerd Enterprises. So well, check out his website. Hector. Yeah, absolutely, Seth. So check out his website, www.nerdenterprises.com. Seth has his own podcast as well called, what's it called, Seth?
The Authentic Accountant.
So check that out. Tons of great content in his website and YouTube channel and articles in his website with videos. Seth, once again, thank you very much. And until next time.
Thank you.